Well, the Federal Court of Canada has rejected another injunction to suspend a vaccine mandate in the workplace. This one was filed by an employee of a Transport Canada supplier. All federal public servants, including those who work from home, must be fully vaccinated against COVID-19, according to government policy. That rule also extends to third-party suppliers and anyone else entering a federal government building. But an injunction application to suspend the vaccine mandate, until it can be challenged in court, was quashed. It's one of several such injunctions and court challenges. Last week, a judge also denied an injunction application from more than 200 unvaccinated public servants. The applicants were members of the Corps Public Administration, including the RCMP. For more on this, I'm joined by Malini Vijayakumar. She's an employment and labor lawyer with Nelligan Law in Ottawa. Hi there.
Hi, thanks for having me.
These most recent court decisions were to reject an injunction, those not decisions about the vaccine mandate itself. Can you explain that distinction?
Yeah, exactly. So right now we're seeing a bunch of these injunction decisions come up, and it's important to remember that these are all parties that want to challenge the policies on their merits, but they know that the actual court date for the challenge on the merits is probably going to be perhaps several months from now. And so what they're asking the court to do is, usually when you want to challenge a policy or have the court strike something like that down, the court's default is to allow the employer to keep the policy in place until you get to your court date where you actually get to fight about it. In these cases, what these employees are trying to do is to ask the court, don't do that, suspend them up front, suspend these policies up front until we can come back in front of you to fight about them properly. And so far the court is saying, no, we're not going to do that.
What difference does it make, though?
Well, for one, if you can win an injunction, if you can get the court to suspend these policies for the potentially several months that it'll take before you can come back and argue about them on their merits, that is a victory in and of itself, because in order to win an injunction, one of the things you have to prove is that the policy is going to cause you irreparable harm. And if you're able to show that at the injunction stage, then that's probably going to help you somewhat in your argument when you actually come back to fight about the thing on its merits. Another thing you have to show is that there's an actual serious legal issue here. So you don't have to prove your case on the merits of the policy up front, but if you can get the court to agree with you that there's a serious issue that these policies might not be enforceable, then again, that can help you when you come back at the end of the day to fight about the thing more permanently.
Okay, but if so many of the injunctions have been rejected, is that an indication of what's to come when the vaccine policies themselves would be challenged in court?
Not necessarily. Courts always say, they always take pains to remind the public on these injunction motions that, look, we are not deciding whether this policy is legally valid or not. We're simply saying that you can't meet the extraordinary test for making us suspend it up front until we can actually consider this on its merits. So somebody might lose an injunction, but when at the end of the day, the court might find that the policy is illegal for whatever reason, or the court might say, look, I'm sorry, you know, I still don't agree with you and I don't agree on the merits. I think this policy is just fine. So it's not really that, you know, you can predict what's going to happen at the end of the day from an injunction decision.
What are you hearing from employees about the vaccine mandates?
Well, it's interesting because so much of this is a balancing exercise, right, between different employees' rights and employers' obligations. You have employees on the one hand who are, you know, really concerned, who want a vaccine mandate, who maybe are immunocompromised, or they have, you know, somebody at home who is immunocompromised, somebody they're mindful of. And they're saying, you know, I don't feel safe coming into work. I want my employer to put in place a vaccine mandate. Then you have employees, of course, on the other side of the fence who are saying, I don't want a vaccine mandate. Maybe, you know, I have a congenital heart condition, which means that, you know, I might have issues with the vaccine. And, you know, I don't think this policy allows for accommodation of my concerns. Or maybe there are employees who just say outright, I don't want such a policy at all. So different employees certainly have different interests and worries here.
The second point, though, that you made about accommodation for people who have, say, a heart condition or whatever, what are employers not supposed to be finding ways of, in those situations, of perhaps putting people in posts or positions where they're not necessarily dealing with other other colleagues or employees, et cetera?
Well, they certainly have a duty to accommodate. You know, it's a ground under human rights legislation. If you raise a need for accommodation, let's say based on a medical need or something like that, then your employer has to do everything it can to accommodate you short of what's called undue hardship. And that undue hardship really, it really varies based on the employer and the situation. But these policies are certainly all supposed to contain some carve out, some recognition of the employer's duty to do that. The problem is, though, with some employees, some concerns that I've heard are, yes, the policy says this, but then I actually raised a concrete accommodation concern, and it seemed like my employer had no idea how to handle it, and they just told me I was out of luck. So not only does the policy have to make note of the employer's obligation to accommodate, the employer actually has to follow through on that in whatever way makes sense for that workplace.
But addressing those concerns, for instance, I'm just trying not to muddle things together here from my own perspective. Those concerns would be separate from what we're talking about with the injunction application, right? For if somebody has a health concern or a situation where they can't take the vaccine, and the employer is just saying, "Oh, I don't know how we'd handle that." That seems to me to be a more clear cut situation where there's sort of a protocol in place for employers to be handling it. No.
Yes, you're right. So the injunction cases we're seeing are on the policy as a whole. So not really talking about accommodation concerns, which are more individual. Individually specific, but people who are trying to get the court to suspend the operation of the policies overall. But at any point, if you're an employee who's having an issue with an accommodation request or something, there's nothing stopping those employees from going to the Human Rights Commission or the Human Rights Tribunal, filing their complaints now itself. That doesn't mean you're trying to get them to suspend the whole policy. That means that you're just trying to make sure that your right to accommodation is respected. So lots of different issues, some on the group scale, some on the individual scale.
Are you expecting we'll continue to see legal challenges to the mandates?
I absolutely believe so. I mean, for every single injunction case that's being brought, there is an underlying challenge to the merits of these policies overall. So the case that you were talking about with the supplier, for example, to the federal government, we know that that injunction, that they were unsuccessful on the injunction, but there's still a court day coming where they're going to fight out the merits of the actual policy itself. So we're seeing all the injunction cases coming up right now because those are the ones that get heard on a really short notice basis. But down the line, I would expect a few months from now to see a slew of decisions on the actual policies.
Malini, thanks very much for your time today.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Malini Vijayakumar is an employment and labor lawyer with Nelligan Law in Ottawa.